again, everybody. Welcome to the Mainland Podcast. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. Welcome to episode number 113. It is February of 2018. That means it's the last monthly installment of the off-season podcast, and I'm pretty excited about that because that means we'll be back to weekly soon, and we'll be back in the regular season with Orlando City's 2018 season. Joining me, as always, David Rowe up in Tallahassee. Dave, how you doing?
Despite technical difficulties, I'm doing okay. And like you, looking forward to, speaking every week rather than this once a month stuff and being able to talk about our beloved Orlando City.
Well, next year we may have to go to a bi-weekly format in the off season because, man, we had a lot happen again since the last time we talked, and we have a whole new team since the last podcast, essentially. The Kyle Larin thing was put to bed, put to rest forever. We are going to – let's just start off by talking about that since Larin's new team, Besiktas, did not bother dressing him today for Champions League play in a 5-0 defeat on the road at Bayern Munich. But Kyle went over there, decided to just force his way to a team that had not made a bona fide offer to Orlando City. There was a lot of animosity between the two sides, and they finally got it done. I'm sure we'll never know the true value of what was gotten and how it was paid and all of that. We do know that Orlando City got the entire transfer fee. There was nothing going to the league, nothing going to the player, and it's done. Kyle Larin no longer a Lion. In fact, we always say forever a Lion, but with Kyle's exit the way he did it, Dave, not sure that's true of Kyle Larin.
Yeah, I'm not so sure how the supporters are going to feel about if we tried to put that tag on him. We addressed this before of how it was poorly done, and you know, it's funny we're talking about it today, and you know, I know you and I, other than having to talk about it during the podcast, have kind of put this in the rearview mirror for a while. It's been so long since I've actually thought about Kyle, other than his supposed current team was playing today in Champions, but of course, you know, he was nowhere to be seen.
Yeah, Kyle not getting a lot of run out for Besiktas, and they are supposedly shopping him to loan him out somewhere. We've heard that it could be China or the Ukraine or Russia. Not exactly what Kyle had in mind when he went to a Champions League team in Europe. And, you just have to say, well, you know, the karma is kind of a bitch sometimes, and I don't really wish him ill or anything, but I mean, the club was trying to honor his wishes and was trying to find a buyer for him at a price that the club deemed acceptable, and you know, whether that might have taken another half season to the summer window or whatever, the player and his agent, probably the player talked into it by his agent. I'm guessing he got some advice from his representation that said this is the way we're going to go about this, and I don't think it was a good way to go about it. Definitely think that in the end he will probably regret it at some point. But I mean, he's a young kid, and he got advice from adults that are supposed to know what they're doing, and certainly they have other clients, not only in MLS, but in other leagues around the world. So, you know, they're not newbies to being soccer, agents. So, whatever happens with Kyle, I mean, it's going to be a learning experience for him, hopefully. And we already in Orlando have turned the page and moved on. So, Kyle is not with the club anymore in any way, shape, or form. He's not, his rights are not owned by the club, and all of that happened a couple of weeks ago. So, as you mentioned, we've kind of put this in the rear view in terms of writing stories and talking about it, but we haven't discussed it since the last podcast. So obviously now that it's official, we have discussed it, and we could say that we've covered this subject ad nauseum, and we really probably don't need to say a whole lot more about it. It'll be interesting to see how his career unfolds. And again, I don't wish him any ill, and I certainly will look back fondly as at his time in purple, although now it is tinged with this sort of the specter of how he left. But he certainly gave fans a lot of thrills. His name will forever be in the history books as part of Orlando City Soccer Club. And we move on, turn the page. It's a whole brand new year, and we have quite a few new players to talk about.
Right on deals, Kyle.
So let's start out where I'm just going to kind of go through some of the things that have happened since we last talked, and we'll maybe just chew the fat a little bit about them. But I don't want to go too in depth on each individual move because there have been so many, and each one seems, I guess, more surprising than the last. There's been quite a few surprises, and just a real. I mean, we knew when we saw what players were let go at the end of the season, there were going to be a lot of changes, but it's been unbelievable the turnover on this team. Now, we can go back to Cam Lindley coming in. He's a player that played for North Carolina, and Rafael Ramos, an old USL Lion, going to the Chicago Fire for his rights. So Cam Lindley, very highly touted midfielder coming in. The Lions have added an outstanding defensive midfielder, Yuri Rosell, from he used to be with Sporting Kansas City. We got him from Sporting CP in Portugal, although he was on loan. Never quite caught on, successfully over in Europe, but just a phenomenal player at the MLS level when he was here before. The Lions also drafted Chris Mueller out of Wisconsin. He's been having just an amazing preseason, just scoring goals left and right. As a rookie, you're not used to seeing that, but he's done phenomenally. You got the Lions trading for, this one was big for me and a big surprise, Justin Meerum coming over from Columbus. Amazing signing, and just a great move by the front office to bring in a fantastic wing player, can play as a second striker, can play underneath Dom Dwyer, just a lot of places he can play. And he's a good locker room guy from all accounts, very good guy, and a leader. And he's the kind of guy who's going to give you goals. He's going to give you some spectacular goals from distance and can set up other people. So very big signing there. They went out and got some defenders as well. Got Amro Tarek on loan. And also, just today became official as we record this on the 20th. Sané. They got Sané, and he comes over from Werder Bremen. He's got Bundesliga and League One experience. So just almost an embarrassment of riches coming into Orlando since the last time we talked. I think we were just like giddy talking about Sasha Kljestan. Now we've got all these other guys. So Lamine Sané comes in today, and Rosell is now in Orlando. So we've got a lot of guys who have come in, and just want to get your overall thoughts. Which of these guys, was the biggest surprise for you? Who are you most happy about, and who do you think might be sort of a sleeper that is gonna do big things, even though we may not expect a whole lot?
The biggest surprise, I think it's probably the same as it was for you, would be Justin Meram. Talk about a guy, an MLS veteran. He's been with Columbus his entire career. I think the whole potential move to Austin stuff kind of either shook him out of, put him in a different mindset, and he was wanting something a little bit more stable. And fortunately, we were there to be that thing for him. $750,000 in TAM, $300,000 in GAM, and an international slot for the guy. But I think it was a really good move, and he's going to provide he's going to provide some, you know, veteran leadership in the midfield. So my person, I think that it's going to be a surprise, or who I would have said was going to be a surprise, but like you said, he's kind of been on fire so far, was Chris Mueller. 21-year-old, sixth overall pick for us out of Wisconsin. He had all kinds of accolades when he was there for the Badgers, but most importantly, like you said, he's been scoring goals since he's been here during the preseason. There were a lot of people saying that he was probably of those, you know, top 10 guys, he was the most MLS ready. And I think he's showing that in the preseason. Hopefully that transfers into the regular season. And, you know, even if he's just coming off the bench, if he's providing that spark in the second half and getting in there with fresh legs and able to score some goals, I think that'd be fantastic. And he's not just a pure striker, you know, like Kyle was. I mean, he can create a little bit. He can, he's good on set pieces. So, I mean, I think it'll be good. My overall opinion on everything, as I was going back and kind of getting ready for the podcast, it was, excuse me. I was looking in every, I'd look at a young guy and I'd look at a veteran. I'd look at a young guy and I'd look at a veteran. And you can tell that the front office was doing a really good job of putting together a team that can compete with good youth that has great potential. But at the same time, you know, bringing in the veterans that can help those guys along. I mean, we talked about Sasha. Obviously, we talked about Miriam. You know, we already have, you know, Specs and Bendik, but then you got, you know, some of our other guys, you know, younger guys like Yoshi and Yadin and Mueller and Pino. And so, like I say, I think overall, all the moves spoke to me as a good mix of the future and the present, while maybe focusing a little bit more on the present to try and get into the playoffs. But I'm ecstatic with. There's nothing that has happened in this offseason that I'm like, oh, darn, everything. I think they've done a heck of a job. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I want to clarify one thing. Although Merrim is an Iraqi international, he's not an international slot player. He was born in Michigan.
Right,
American,
no.
So, good.
Right, no, that's not what I meant.
So, it was, yeah.
I think we still traded an international slot for him.
He's got it, but he definitely has international experience as well as a lot of these other guys that have been brought in, like Sané, who's played for Senegal, and it's great because these guys have played at high levels, and I'm very excited about seeing all of them. In fact, it's amazing how excited we are by this because everybody's sort of forgotten about Yoshi and Scott Sutter, you know, some of the guys that we got down the stretch, even Dom, and Dom, of course, has been hurt, but in this preseason. But yeah, it's almost been like every present you open, you know, at Christmas is a new one that is like makes you almost forget about the last one you opened. It's pretty crazy.
And there's been so many presents.
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's been a tremendous off season. A lot of credit to both Jason Kreis and Nicky Budalic for putting together some really, really strong moves. You know, we heard a lot of names that were out there, and some of those things fell through. There's no telling what kind of other players that we didn't even hear of that were in the mix for, but didn't just quite work out for one reason or another. We do know that the one defender we heard that they came in under his release clause, so they weren't able to secure him. But Sané, it looks like. I mean, if you're talking about a guy who was playing at a high level in the Bundesliga. So that should translate pretty well to MLS play. So I'm pretty excited about that, and I want to see him play. Big guy who could be a target for Yotun and Kleshtun on set pieces. So, mm-hmm. Really looking forward to getting him on the field since he's brand new, getting Rossell on the field. I mean, it's pretty amazing. They haven't even got everybody on the field together yet. Dwyer's been out. He played in one preseason game. And, as often happens, one muscle injury begets another one when you come back from it. He'll be back in a couple of weeks, and, he doesn't have a long history of of nasty injuries, so I'm not expecting this to be a big problem. The other guy we talked about last time quite a bit was Coleman, and we've kind of forgotten about him because he got injured and has been out for a while. So, and you know, it's funny because a lot of people have tweeted and asked me in comments and things about, you know, why all these injuries. But really, if you look at this preseason, there haven't been many. Two of them have been to Dom, one to Coleman. Lindley, you know, he had a hamstring tweak that kept him out only a couple of days. So there's really not been a ton of injuries. Larea now also picked up a knock when Dom was hurt. So, you know, injuries are part of the game, but we haven't seen the kind of injuries this year in preseason that we've seen in the past, for sure. So it's just that we're so gun-shy because we've had so many injuries in the past. I just can tell you, as a Manchester United fan, you guys haven't seen anything in terms of it. I mean, I don't even know. They had forwards playing defense at one point. But, yeah, it's not that bad. So, you know, don't stop firing the training staff. It's not the same training staff that from 2015 or 2016, beginning of the year. You know, stop firing those guys. Stop burning down Orlando Health. It's nobody's fault. It's part of sports. It's not a big deal at this point. Now, you know, if they get a rash of 5 or 6 more injuries, then you can panic a little bit. But right now, it's actually been, if you look around the league, not too unusual. It's not an unusually high amount of injuries. So, well, hopefully these guys will come back pretty quick and we'll be able to get on with things. But the great thing about this team is they have some depth. And
suddenly we have some depth.
Yeah, and so they might that depth might get a test early with, you know, some of Dwyer's backups maybe having to play in the preseason. We know that Kleshchen can't play in the opener or the second game due to suspension. But, you know, you look down the roster and you've got to feel pretty good about the guys that are filling in. So especially the way that Mueller has played, you know, since coming on, and Pino's even scored. So it's nice to see that, and again, just having a guy like Justin Meerham on the team is going to make your midfield better and your scoring attack better. So
yeah, there's an embarrassment of riches in the midfield. I mean, it's you know, okay, Sasha's out, you know, for the first two. Okay, there's, you know, you got Yoshi, you got Meerham. There's so many. You got Johnson, and like you said, we're forgetting about the guys that were already here.
Is anybody even talking about Christian Nogueira these days?
Not much, unfortunately,
Christian,
for him.
I mean, we don't really talk about Will Johnson a lot. I mean, these are veteran players that you know, are quality MLS players, and it's, you know, they're going to have trouble getting on the field. It's just amazing. So I'm really excited about this roster. I'm really excited to see how it comes together and how the you know, how Jason Christ, how quickly he can get them up and running. I mean, it's, you know, again, like I mentioned Scott Sutter before, last year Scott Sutter was probably, you'd have to say, he was one of the three best players on the team, I think, last year.
Absolutely.
And now he's you know, way, you know, nobody's even talking about him. Same as you know, and you pick up a young kid like Jose Villarreal, and we're not even talking about him. He's a guy from, you know, that has a lot of potential to be really good, and
still has MLS experience too.
Yeah, he's got MLS experience. It's just one guy after another after another. Rossell hasn't played with the team yet. Dylan Powers, the former Rookie of the Year, is like almost an afterthought on this team. You know, it really is a solid roster. I don't know if there's some guys that I don't know if they're going to get some playing time. Tony Rocha going to get any playing time? Is PC going to get any playing time? It's hard to say. RJ Allen is a really high quality backup. Just down the line, a very, very good looking roster. And I think a lot of people around the league really like what Orlando City has done. Now, that said, these guys haven't played together yet, so it's going to take a little bit of time before they gel and really kind of get to know one another on the field, especially with some of the guys that have been out this preseason. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't think that Dom will be a problem getting on the same page with guys. He's a striker. He's a guy who knows what to do in the box, and you've got guys like Meerham and Kleshchen and Yotun and Coleman that excel at getting the ball to players like that. So I don't anticipate any problems there. Rosell is a guy who's probably going to need to find some chemistry with not only with the back line and the attacking midfield, but I don't expect that to take long because he's played in MLS before. He knows what to expect from everything, the travel, the difficulty of the league, everything. And Coleman is a kid, and he's maybe a guy that you would like to see get on the field sooner rather than later, so he can start building up some chemistry. But overall, a lot of depth, a lot of talent, a lot of different guys have been scoring and contributing this preseason. We've heard a lot of good things about a lot of players, so good stuff. Good stuff for Orlando City Soccer Club, and just a tremendous amount of turnover since. Or additions, I should say, since the last time that you and I talked on the podcast. So, good job by Christ, good job by Budalich, and can't wait to see them. So shame that we couldn't see any preseason games.
Yeah, right. And it's funny, everything I've everything on Twitter that I'm seeing, from various people who are simply supporters is how excited they are about all the acquisitions and there's that tentative hopefulness that is evident in their tweets of I don't want to get excited, but I'm kind of excited. And so hopefully all of this will come around the way that we are all hoping it will. And I as you were saying that, it might take some time for them to come together, I was thinking to myself, you know what? Excuse me, everybody. I got a little bit of a cough. Last season, we had that brilliant start to the year, and Michael and I are espousing how great it is. And I'm thinking this year, you know what? If we have an okay start to the year and then everybody gels and it gets better, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that the crowd will certainly help with the gelling early. I think having some early home games is gonna be beneficial. But really no telling how this is gonna all come to pass, how it's all going to go. But I do think that the tools are now in the toolbox for Orlando City. I think that Jason Christ said a video that the club put out the other day. Something that really stuck with me is that he and Nicky and the management of Orlando City thought, with the roster they had going into 2017, that they really only needed to make a few minor adjustments and they would be right there competing. And what they didn't realize was just how good the East got in that same offseason.
Right.
And it kind of left them behind. And so they said, well, we're taking a big swing at it this year. We're not going to just do half measures. We're gonna go all in, and they really did. They've put their money where their mouth is. They've spent mountains of GAM and TAM. They've used their international slots wisely. They've got some guys coming off of international slots because they're getting green cards, so they're moving guys and managing the roster that way, and it's just been good to see. Hopefully, it will translate to the field. I do see a lot of optimism on social media where there was nothing but pessimism at the end of the season, and even in the first week, really, of after the season ended, after MLS Cup, when couple teams made a move or two, and everybody started freaking out that Orlando City was doing nothing but sitting on their hands. And now you can't look at what Orlando City did this offseason and say that they were not the most active team in Major League Soccer.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it was, and not just us saying that, but there's been, national media have said that, Orlando had probably the best off season as far as all the moves they made, the acquisitions, et cetera. And, it's funny because, 2 months ago when we were talking about, the people being upset that nothing was seemingly happening, we said, look, that's not how Orlando City works, and that's not how Jason Christ works. Guys, just be patient. It'll happen. But I don't think either you or I thought it would happen this much. I mean, it's felt like I know for us as a staff, it's felt like a landslide, especially some days of just, this new person, this new person, this new person. And it like I said, the amount and the quality of the moves, eventually, I accepted it, but initially it kind of took me by surprise.
Absolutely. It's been amazing to see. Nobody, I haven't seen one move where, the national pundits were going, this doesn't make any sense. This move doesn't make any sense. It's been a lot of really high praise, pretty universally. So, hopefully everybody's really smart and this is all really going to work out. Now, on the other side of things, on the NWSL side of things, a very quiet beginning to the off season for Tom Sormani. I mean, he came into the off season with the team that was, aside from losing the playoff game, obviously the hottest team down the stretch in the NWSL, and probably didn't have a whole lot of moves to make. And while he sat back and just kind of relaxed and chilled out while teams were trading Sam Kerr and Kristen Press and Carly Lloyd and all these huge name players were going all over the place, and the Pride were just chilling, just kicking back. And then,
It looked like he was just taking an Australian vacation.
yeah, and you didn't know if the you know you knew the Pride were going to have to make some moves at some point, and you just didn't know exactly how that was going to shake out. You just figured, add a couple pieces and you're good to go. So they go out and they get Sydney Leroux to join an attack that already features Alex Morgan, Marta, Rachel Hill, Chioma Ubogagu, just another weapon for Tom Sormani. The one thing that you knew that he needed coming into the season was a defender. He said he wanted a physical defender. He wanted to go out and get a center back. Goes out and gets Shalina Zdorsky from the Washington Spirit. Trades Aubrey Bledsoe, backup goalkeeper, and a pick for her. And goes out and drafts Nadia Gomes in the college draft. And then some wheeling and dealing. Steph Catley, the travel from Orlando to Australia getting a bit much for her. She asked to move to the West Coast, so she moves to the West Coast via trade to Seattle, and he goes ahead and replaces Steph by picking up Carson Pickett, who went to school here in the state of Florida. Also, picked up backup goalkeeper Haley Koppmeyer, who's been a starter in this league. So again, no lack of quality, behind Ashlyn Harris. It's good to see that, even, we thought Aubrey Bledsoe did really well last year and was maybe the best backup goalkeeper in the league. And now maybe he still has the best backup goalkeeper in the league with Koppmeyer. And also, she's a great Twitter follow. So if you're on Twitter, follow Haley
Yes.
Koppmeyer. And then also picked up Christine Nairn. Christine Nairn is a really solid veteran NWSL midfielder. So, really good depth, I think, for the Pride. Of course, he had already re-signed Danny Weatherholt. He now has re-signed Chi. And based on the preseason roster, as Dave hacks up along right here on the
Yeah,
air,
sorry guys.
no kill switch for Dave.
Like
He's
we said, technical difficulties.
based on the preseason roster, they expect Must expect to have Alana Kennedy signing her contract, renewal soon because she is on that roster. So it's good to see that. And it looks like you're thinking, oh, good off season, high quality off season. Then Tom goes out and gets Brazilian international defender Pollyanna, who is also just a really wonderfully gifted offensive player in addition to being able to play fullback, and she can play the midfield. She's a lot like Camilla in a lot of ways, in fact, and pretty good size. So another addition to the defense, and another sign to me that maybe we'll be seeing Krieger and Zdorsky as the center back pairing with Pickett and Poliana as your fullbacks. That could be what your back line looks like this year for the Pride. But there's certainly some depth when you talk about Tony Presley and you talk about Monica. Certainly plenty of depth there, and even some depth at fullback. And get to the point where you're not really sure how Kristen Edmonds gets on the field right now. And then he goes out and says, you know what? We have Marta, but let me go out and get the Australian international number 10, Emily Van Egmond. And even more attacking firepower. So maybe the defense doesn't even need to be that good. It's really crazy how good an offseason the Pride have had. I had some people around the league asking me, is Orlando going to – they haven't done anything. Are they going to, have – everybody else has improved. How are they going to improve? And I didn't really necessarily see that as a fact. I mean, I definitely think some teams got deeper with the, with the Boston Breakers expansion dispersal draft, helping some teams get deeper. But I thought a lot of the big teams that were already good, I think North Carolina gave up quite a bit to get better, to get some players that they got. I think they gave up quite a bit. And I think, losing Press to gain Kerr, you went from what one of the league's highest goal scorers to the league's highest goal scorer. So yeah, you get a little bit better there, but
Incrementally.
So I didn't think anybody really took off and got out of Orlando's sort of orbit. And now with the moves that Orlando has made, I really think that they have had just as good an offseason, or if not better than anyone else in NWSL.
You know, I think it's funny that a team that adds Sidney LaRue and Pollyanna and Van Egmond didn't do much.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, Van Egmond, she's 24, she's 5'10" midfielder, and Sermani said he wanted to go bigger. So, that's the kind of player that can do that. We all know, what Sidney can do, and that's just three off the top of my head. I mean, that's not even, including the other moves that they made, like Zdorsky. So it's just like the MLS squad, they addressed the needs. And I think that's the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway I take from this offseason for both teams is the front office did an exceptional job of going, okay, this is what we need, targeting the players they want and getting them in.
And I think that not only did they gained so much depth, really, that I think that it really gives Sermani a lot of options, and it'll enable him to rotate his squad a little more and maybe keep Marta fresher, keeps, Alex Morgan a little bit fresher. You've got, you lose a Jasmine Spencer in that trade to Seattle, but you effectively replace Jasmine Spencer with Sidney LaRue. I think that's a pretty big win right there. You go out and draft essentially another Jasmine Spencer, the type of player that Nadia has been. Now, of course, you always have casualties when people come in, and Nicolette Dries and Jamia Fields have exited the team. They were both waived, and probably not huge surprises. Neither was able to get on the field regularly last year. It really looked like for a while, with all the moves or the Pride were making, that I was kind of concerned that we wouldn't see Chioma come back this year. Because
yeah, that was a late kind of oh good, because we like Chi, and so that was one of the last little, I was sitting there going, okay, any day now, and then all of a sudden we get the note that she got signed, and so that was a little bit of a relief.
Absolutely. So the only thing that hasn't happened is Alana Kennedy has not re-signed yet. She is on the preseason roster, but she is with Australia, the Australian national team, with the Algarve Cup after winning the W League just a few days ago. So yeah. Hasn't had time to breathe, really, let alone sign anything. And it would be nice to get Alana signed, sealed, and delivered, because I think really – you look at the Pride's midfield when Camilla comes back. You look at you're looking at Camilla, you're looking at Kennedy, you're looking at Weatherholt, you're looking at Naren, at Van Egmond. I mean, Kristen Edmonds, just unbelievable talent and depth in that midfield.
Yeah, it's once again we're mirroring what the MLS squad did here. Is fantastic midfield, added a few pieces on the defense, and a piece here and there on the attack. And it's like you say, with if you have Marta, Camille when she comes back, Van Egmond, good grief. The embarrassment of riches that that allows you. I mean, you know, so even if you know, somebody's a little tired and they're not in that match, or they come in the second half. I mean, how would you like to be the team that Marta comes off and then Van Agman comes on?
Yeah, it's amazing. And Van Agman, she's not coming on off the bench unless it's the rest. Because I didn't even mention Marta as a midfielder because you know, she'll probably be starting up top to start the season because of the Camilla injury, and that's going to keep. Here's what you got going now. With Jasmine Spencer is no longer your super sub. So now your super sub is either going to be Sydney LaRue, Chioma Obogugu, or Rachel Hill.
Yeah. Rachel Hill, who lit up the Australian League.
That's a tremendous upgrade at your super sub scoring position. So really, really going to be exciting season for the Pride. They should make the playoffs. They should contend for an NWSL Cup, and it's going to be fun to watch the whole thing. Hopefully everybody will stay healthy, and we'll see more of that Marta and Morgan partnership. And you're going to certainly not going to be able to put four players on Marta and just kick her in the shins all day when you've got Emily Van Agman on the field as well. So
that's right.
It's going to be fun. So speaking of all of these additions to the Pride, I was able to talk to Shalina Zdorsky a few days ago. Put my foot in my mouth a little bit. I said, I mentioned that she probably knows Tom Sormani pretty well from her time with the Canadian national team, and I didn't match up the dates. She came in right after Tom left there, so they kind of missed each other. So I kind of put my foot in a little bit, but didn't check my facts as carefully. I was a little bit more sure than I should have been without checking that fact. But she was a delight to talk to. She was bed shopping because she was moving into Orlando, but now she's with the Canadian national team with the Algarve Cup team, and she was fun to talk to. We're gonna get to that interview with Shalina right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast is Orlando Pride defender Shalina Zdorsky. Shalina, thanks for being on the podcast.
Michael, thank you very much for inviting me.
So I wanted to start off by asking you, what were your overall thoughts when you heard about the trade to Orlando? How did you find out about it? What was running through your head at that time?
I guess the first thing I can say is I was extremely excited. I had obviously two seasons at Washington under my belt, and I personally felt like it was time for a change, just professionally, emotionally, and all around. And I was very thankful that Jim Guevara was able to be open to that need for a change, and that he was able to find something he wanted in return for his club. And so I was at home and I got the call, and I was extremely pleased.
So I want to just make sure I got this right. So did you actually request to be moved?
You are correct. Yeah. I really just mentally and I really was in a space where I had hoped for a bit of a change and a fresh start for my career, and I couldn't be happier that it ended up being Orlando.
It was a kind of a whirlwind kind of year for the Spirit, going from appearing in the Cup final to how things unfolded last year. I'm sure that was a very, very strange time to be with the Spirit last year.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it was obviously a challenge. No athlete likes losing. They would lie if they told you they did. But you know what? I think there's always going to be those tough years in your career, and I wouldn't change anything now. I think I learned a lot about myself as a player, as a teammate, as someone who wants to be a leader, because it was extremely challenging to be one and in that environment. And I think credit to the people who tried to keep us going and just all my teammates and the staff who wanted to stay positive, but obviously it was very different from playing in the final to finishing last place.
Yeah. Now, how many of the current Pride players have you had the opportunity to play with before in various places?
I first firstly, out of Michigan, I went to play in the Australian W League, and I played for Perth Glory, where I played with Alana Kennedy, which was awesome. We actually, we were center back partners then, and we had a great time in Perth. And then I had the pleasure of playing alongside Allie Krieger and with Christine Nairn in the midfield with Washington. And, wow, I'm trying to think who else. I've obviously played against many of the players, which isn't always fun because they're obviously a lot of them have some serious attacking power. But yeah, thinking now it's Alana, Allie, and Nairn. Oh, and funny enough, actually, Haley Kottmeyer, we played at Michigan together.
Ah, yes, another new arrival here. Who were some of the first players on the team to reach out to you after the trade and sort of give you your welcome?
Yeah, one of the first was actually Ashlyn, and then also Allie and Alana. And I think it was really sweet of Ashlyn to reach out because she's obviously a great leader on the team. And we don't know each other personally that well. So that was kind of sweet of her to go out of her way to reach out. And then it was nice chatting with Allie and Alana. And then obviously staff members like Emma and I know each other from Washington. And it's been great working with Tom this far.
Yeah, you know, Tom, I know you know him well from, you know, the work that he did with the Canadian women's national team. How does his coaching style fit you as a player?
Well, you know what? Actually, I was not with the national team when Tom was.
Oh, okay.
I made the squad right after the World Cup, and that's when Tom had moved on from the Canadian team.
Just
so
okay.
This is my first experience being coached by Tom. I obviously knew of him and I think vice versa, but as him, as a head coach, this will be my first go at it. And I'm extremely excited. I think from watching Orlando last year and from kind of seeing an opportunity that, this is a back line I want to be a part of. And these are players that I've played with Alana and Allie, and these are players who I think hopefully I can really complement well and vice versa. And I just like his style of play, that he wants to play. He wants to have a strong defensive unit, but then have that attacking power going forward and creating chances. And I think with that, you need someone who can organize and who can be ready for counterattacks.
Yeah, Tom has added some more offensive firepower this offseason. But one of the issues that the Pride had last year was against some of the teams, some defensive issues, and I'm sure that your arrival in Orlando is partly due to that, because this is a team that needed to shore up the defense a bit. Has Tom talked to you at all about your role and how you'll fit in and you know, how he envisions you? Because you mentioned you know, wanting to be a leader, and I'm sure that the back line could use some more leadership back there.
I would never put words in Tom's mouth. I don't think he's explicitly said out loud where he sees me. I think like any player, he expects me to come in and do my best for preseason and for all the opportunities that come about. So he hasn't explicitly said his kind of vision for me, but hopefully we can work together and I can build that trust and work my way into it, because I think that's the right way to go about it.
Okay. Now, congratulations. You were named to the Algarve Cup team. How much camp time do you envision missing on Algarve Cup duty with Canada?
Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate, to be honest. Just in terms of timing, because you want to do both and you're very fortunate to have the opportunity to do both. But I think it's a difficult time to miss preseason with the girls and that kind of gelling time in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
However, with that being said, I know there's a large portion that will be away with the She Believes Cup and Algarve Cup and whatnot. So I'm not the only one. And I think, you know what, that could be a challenge, or it could also be an opportunity for everyone to bring their experience together and mingle, maybe at different times. But it's obviously tough, but I'm excited to do both.
Now, given some of the moves around the NWSL this offseason, I mean, some really big names changing teams this year, what do you think Orlando, of what Orlando's done? Have they done enough to not only keep up with teams like Portland and North Carolina, but also to close that gap toward becoming a championship contender?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say I'm, well, let's be real, I am biased already because I'm excited to be here. And I think with the caliber of players that we have and the changes that Tom has made, or I guess enhancements in his eyes and in the club's eyes, I think we're in a really good space. I think we have some exciting internationals that he's invested in. And we also have players who've been around the league and who know what it takes, they know what it takes to win a championship, with the likes of Ali Krieger, Christine Nairn, Ashlyn, and all those players who have that experience. And then you mix it with the likes of Alex Morgan and Marta and just people who change games. I think we're in a really good space.
Speaking of those players, how much does having so many great offensive weapons like the Pride has, how much does that take the pressure off you as a defensive player?
Yeah, you know what? It's huge. I think, as a defender, I'm sure at some point in every defender's career, they've played on a team where they've played 90-minute games of defending, which is not fun. It's extremely exhausting. And I think once you get that cohesiveness between all 11, it makes for a much prettier game, but also a game that's just more balanced. And I promise you, us defenders want to pass the ball and play with the ball too. We don't want to just defend. So I think it's really exciting to have players who, hopefully I'll be able to use passing to get them in behind and really allow them to show their strength too.
You know, when you look at this team and you look at an Ali Krieger and an Alana Kennedy, and, you know, the team brought in Pollyanna and Carson Pickett this offseason, and you've got Monica still with the team and yourself, how good can this defense be in front of Ashlyn Harris this year, and how hard will it be to lock down a starting position on this defense?
Yeah, I mean, look at all those names, and you got Tony Dion returning as well. I think it's extremely competitive, and I think that's the only way you kind of solidify and create a back line, because you need that pressure, and I think you need that pressure to perform in and out of games, but also in training. And I mean, let's just say we'll be going against very tough attackers in training. So you know what? No better training than that. And I think with us pushing each other, it'll be extremely challenging to lock down a starting role. But I think a team that uses every player in some sort of way and is able to access every player's strength, whether they're on the field or off the field, is really important. So hopefully we find that balance.
Well, Shalina Zdorsky, it's been great having you on the podcast. Really appreciate your time. Welcome to Orlando. We hope to write a lot of great things about you at themainland.com this year and in the future. Good luck to you at the Algarve Cup, of course. And, best of luck settling in here in Orlando.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Well, we want to thank Shalina Zdorsky for being our guest this week on the Mainland, or this month, this on the off-season Mainland podcast, episode 113. It was great to talk to her, and really looking forward to seeing her in Orlando City, or Orlando Pride Purple, alongside the likes of Krieger and Monica and Pickett and Pollyanna. It's going to be great to see what she brings to the team, because I think she's a leader type that can really really helped the team. And it was really kind of surprised actually to hear her say that she wanted a leadership challenge elsewhere outside of Washington, looked for the trade and got it, and came to Orlando. And as Christine Nairn said today on social media for the club, every player in the league wants to come to Orlando right now, Dave.
Hey, who can blame them? I mean, beautiful stadium, MARTA. What else do you want?
I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's great. So, anyway, we didn't really get any Ask the Mainland podcast questions this week, other than questions about why can't Orlando City's trainers keep anybody healthy, and why shouldn't they all be fired? And we had a number of those same questions from a lot of different people. So, I think we've already talked about that enough. I don't think it's a problem. I don't think it's an epidemic. I think this is actually a fairly calm year for preseason injuries for Orlando City. I think what you're seeing is that it seems magnified because the names are bigger. Dwyer and Coleman, you know, those are more significant names than Rocha and Ramos that we've seen in the past, you know. So, anyway, I don't really have a lot to add to that conversation. Did you have anything you wanted to say about it?
Other than agreeing with you, I think that people might be overreacting a little bit just because everybody's a little bit. I think it's they're a gun shy about the whole hope thing, and so when any kind of injury creeps up, they're like, "Aha, that's the thing that's going to keep it from happening," and rather than just, you know, taking it as it is.
Yeah, it's. You know, somebody said today, you know, why is this so bad? And I said, you know, they don't remember it being this bad. And I said, have you forgotten 2015 already? I think we're on our fourth forward by the second game. I mean, people don't remember Kyle Larin only played because of so many injuries, because Pedro Ribeiro got hurt. Pedro Ribeiro was in because Martin Patterson got hurt. I mean, it was just one after another back in the beginning, and so. You know, it is what it is. Sports are hard and they hurt. And the guys that play hard and compete against especially against other teams are going to get a knock here and there. So, you know, before you know it, Dom will be back and Coleman will be back, and we won't be too worried about it. I mean, I don't know that Larea would have got on the field anyway in the early going, so you know, we'll see how it all shakes out. But if you want to send us questions, please hit us up on Twitter using the hashtag AskTMLPC, or you could send us an email. We are at themainland@gmail.com, and we are actually, Dave, going to be getting our own email account. I don't have a date for that, but we'll definitely get the word out when that happens. It'll be an actual at themainland.com, you know. Email accounts at some point. So
Ooh.
That's gonna be fancy. So, oh, you fancy, huh?
He's so fancy.
Yeah. So, since we didn't get any questions for Ask the Mainland podcast, Dave, I will ask you, without spoiling anything, what you thought of Black Panther, because I haven't had time to go see it yet.
Oh man, I can't spoil anything. Okay. It was an excellent film. You know, very typically Marvel in that it had, you know, the action was good. There was, you know, just enough comedy in it. And man, it's hard to not spoil anything. I think, and obviously I'm not the only one who liked it. I think it's, you know, 218 over the first weekend, 218 million, that is. So a ton of people saw it. I think you're going to like what they do with the whole vibranium thing, kind of, you know, teasing you guys along. And then you'll like Martin Freeman's. I think he's going to be the new Coulson. And short of that, all the acting was phenomenal. The women in the movie absolutely steal the show and are the strength of the movie. So, well worth it. I like what it sets up going forward, and that's all very, very vague because I was told no spoilers.
That's right. No, we don't spoil here. Your favorite Marvel movie ever?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I think it's still Winter Soldier. just because it was a it was a spy thriller at the same time that it was a superhero movie, and it also introduced the Winter Soldier himself, and it had Shield and it had Hydra. So for me, it's Winter Soldier, but you know, there's cases to be made for Guardians and some others.
Yeah. Oh, love Guardians, love the Winter Soldier, love the first Avengers, and love the most recent Thor. So the bar is pretty high for Black Panther for me, but I think universally people are loving this movie, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're going to be good. I'm not worried about it.
All right. So that's our Ask the Mainland podcast. I'm just asking Dave about movies over here.
Which, to be fair, Ask the Mainland podcast, you can ask anything. Ask us about movies, TV shows. It doesn't have to be about Orlando City.
That's right. You can ask us about soccer or not soccer. We have both flavors here.
That's right.
All right. So before we get out of here, Dave, a couple more things here in our stoppage time segment. We're going to talk a little bit about right here in Orlando, Florida. The U.S. Soccer Federation has chosen a new president. And as if I can quote The Who, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Carlos Cordero, a vote for not all that much change in my book. What did you think of... did the guy win did the candidate win who you thought would win? Are you happy, upset, ambivalent? What do you think?
I think the person that I thought would win. I would have liked it to have maybe gone differently. I can't necessarily say for sure who, you know, maybe Martino. I don't know. You're right. It's a little bit of a, you know, same, you know, new boss, same as the old boss, but, you know, he has a chance to be his own man and to listen to the populism, quote, soccer people that, were making noise during the whole process. Now, hopefully, USSF will not, go down the FIFA route and simply, you know, be a organization that just says to heck with you, we're going to do what we want. He's like I say, he has the opportunity to bring some positive changes, you know, up and down, soccer in the United States, everywhere from the national teams all the way down to, you know, youth soccer. What I think if he gets out there and he puts together some action plans, for lack of a better term, you know, for addressing the concerns that a lot of, like I said, the quote soccer people had, rather than just, you know, kind of going business as usual, then, you know, it might be good. It's one of those things where those of us who care about soccer in the United States need to hold USSF accountable. Mm-hmm. If we don't like what's going on, then speak up. And more importantly, go volunteer locally. You know, that's the best way to change things, is to get out and do it yourself, just like in any election of any sort, whether it's, you know, your, you know, federal, state, local elections, or if it's your U.S. soccer elections. Get out and do something yourself. You know, if you're just sitting back on Twitter and being a troll, well, then you're part of the problem.
Yeah, you know, I thought going into this that Cordero probably was the favorite. I thought because, you know, just based on any organization, the people in power tend to lean heavily toward the status quo. You know, even if there's a slight change, you know, it's something that, you know, they're looking for not big sweeping changes. They're looking for things to more or less stay the same, that, you know, so it's familiar, it's comfortable. Everybody that's in power can continue to slap each other on the back and be in power. But right. I did think there was an outside shot that Kyle Martino could win this thing. I was a little concerned that Kathy Carter could win it, because I didn't think that she had the experience that I was looking for, and I also didn't think she would be bring a whole lot of change. And I'll be honest, I just don't trust some as far as I can throw it. So
I was a little concerned there when I heard there was a groundswell of support for Carter. But I think Cordero probably I would rather have than Carter. I don't think Hope Solo was ever a serious challenger. I don't think Winograd was ever a serious challenger. I think Winalda was a guy who everybody knew who he was, kind of had some popularity going for him, but I don't think he would have necessarily done a great job. I kind of was interested to see what Kyle Martino would do. But in the end, I think that, we'll see how much transparency we get. We'll see how much equality with the women's team we get. We'll see if there are changes, sweeping changes to fix the development system that are need, the things that are needed. And we'll see how it all plays out. I mean, I don't think we'll be any worse off. But it remains to be seen if we'll be better off, and if we are, how much better off we'll be. So, the king is dead. Long live the king.
Yeah. Like I said, he has the opportunity, whether he takes that opportunity and becomes the USSF president that, turns the thing around and gets everybody, behind. If I was him, that's how I would look at it is, okay, yeah, status quo, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm the one that's able to turn around, get us back to the World Cup, get everybody on board and all that, then you go down as legendary versus, a Galati that is, fairly universally despised by the soccer community. So,
yeah, that's a good point. I mean, if the U.S. gets to the next World Cup, then he could just point to, look, we did better than last time.
That's right.
And also, I think he'll really be tied to the next coach of the U.S. men's national team. So whoever that ends up being is going to probably have a lot to say about the perception of Cordero, both now and at the end of the coach's tenure.
Yeah.
So. All right. Before we get out of here, Dave, there are some there were a couple of U.S. Friendlies. The men didn't do great. The women did great. I don't have a lot to say about them other than Alex Morgan scored again, and not a single person scored for the men as they had a 0-0 draw. A young team that was put out there, and a lot of new faces. Will Trapp was the captain of the team, and I think it was his first start. So
right. Yeah, that doesn't bother me because, I mean, that's no familiar faces, just we're going to see, it's kind of the youth movement, see who's out there, who we got, who they are. I'm okay with that. That doesn't, we're not worried about unfortunately, we're not worried about the World Cup. So we have the time to go ahead and do stuff like that. It's not going to bother me.
Yeah, it was not a bad thing to run the lineup out that ran out there. They just didn't look like they were very cohesive. I did think Will Trapp played pretty well, though, actually. I didn't think a lot of guys played well, though. And some guys played downright bad. But
Now we know.
Yeah. But again, it's not the same guys that we're going to be seeing. We're going to definitely see some new faces. There has to be some new blood coming in. But I really think that a lot of the really high quality players that are coming up for the U.S. right now are in that 18 to 23 age range, and they're not really on the radar quite yet, other than Pulisic. You guys like Weston McKennie, the kid who just signed, turned 18, and signed today in Germany. His name is really escaping me right now.
He signed for.
But there's a lot of guys coming up through the system that are going to be, I think, playing a big part, with the U.S. men's national team coming up through this next cycle. The U.S. women, they won easily. That was nice to see. Morgan scored, but Mallory Pugh was easily the best player on the field. Not a lot to say about it. The U.S. women's national team, by the way, it was announced today, will be back in the state of Florida on April 5th.
March 11th.
April, well,
Yeah, they will be. Well, that wasn't announced today. We know about the She Believes Cup.
Oh, right. Sorry.
April 5th, the U.S. women are coming to Jacksonville, Florida to play Mexico in the first of two friendlies against Mexico. That's at Everbank Field, Jacksonville, 7 o'clock on the 5th. I'm hoping to be able to send somebody from the mainland up to Jacksonville to cover that. It's on a Thursday night, so I can't do it, but maybe somebody can, and we'll hopefully do that. But and I will be covering the She Believes Cup at Orlando City Stadium. That's coming up, and of course, that's keeping Alex Morgan and Ashlyn Harris out. They were named to the preliminary roster for that. Not unexpected. We did get the, we got the Federation players who were our you know, who are basically being paid for by the Federation to play for Orlando Pride, but in the NWSL. For the U.S., it's only Harris and Morgan. Krieger and LaRue are off that list. Not a surprise when you've seen the team selections over the last year. And yeah. For Canada, Shalina Zdorsky is on that list. She is a Federation allocated player from Canada to Orlando Pride. So right now, Dave, the Algarve Cup is getting ready to gear up. Australia and Canada are in that, so that affects the Pride's preseason a little bit. And of course, the She Believes Cup also with the U.S. Team is going to affect the Pride preseason a little bit as well. But at least Alex is coming back before June, as opposed to last year. So that's good. And obviously, you know, she's the kind of player who can get up to speed with her teammates pretty quickly, and she and Marta have a pretty good rapport already. So not expecting a big hangover when she comes back from She Believes to start the season. So it's a little bit tough this year because they've crammed the season forward a bit. The NWSL season, the schedule was supposed to drop today. It's going to be 24 games again this year. But with the Breakers being folded, nine teams. So you're playing every team three times. And it'll be interesting, really, to see what the balance is for the Pride. Do they have to go to Seattle twice? Do they have to go to Portland twice? Do they have to play the really top teams on the road twice, like Chicago or North Carolina? Or do they get some of those teams at home? You know, it will be interesting to see how that shapes up, because it's everybody's got to play everybody three times. But I think there could be advantages with playing certain teams twice at home versus on the road. So clearly you don't want to go to Providence Park twice.
Well, not only that, but you know, when you play them.
Yeah, that too. So I think there's some really the makings of a really good rivalry with North Carolina, considering the fact that, you know, they played three times last year. They're going to play three times again this year. The Pride mm-hmm. have had their number a little bit. The won two of the three games last year, including a road game. And then the year before when they were Western New York, those were very close games. They were both 1-0 games. So, you know, a nice little rivalry, I think, and a regional one as well with North Carolina. And of course, we know since you and I last talked, we know that the team is going to start off at home on March 24th against Utah Royals FC, a brand new team, which essentially is the old FC Kansas City, kind of. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of turnover, too. So that will be Utah's first game as a franchise. So, you know, they're going to be very pumped up for that. So the Pride have their hands full, although they won't be in Portland for their opener this year. They're still going to have you know, a tough emotional game to play, and they're going to be the home opener, the Pride, that is, for both Washington and Portland the next two games. They're going to be away week two to Washington. Then there's an international break. We already mentioned the U.S. against Mexico, and that will take place in that third week, and that's over an international break. There'll be no games that weekend in the NWSL, and then the week after that, they're going to Portland. So a tough little schedule to start the season for the Pride, and maybe not quite as tough as last year, but we do know they're going to get two of their first three on the road and a week off in between there. So for the first month, we're only going to see the Pride one time in Orlando, and I'm really looking forward to tomorrow or today as this drops to see what the rest of that schedule looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, going out to those two tough ones, you know, right away. Well, you know, get to see how you know, at least who's there is gelling, and get to see some of the new faces. So, you know, you take it now or you take it later.
Exactly. So really looking forward to both Orlando City and the Pride getting going both in the month of March this year. There's no OCB, so we're going to have a lot more focus on two teams, no teams rather than trying to cover three teams. Which is good because our staff's a little bit smaller than it was this time last year too. but yeah, it's going to be cool. Looking forward to it. You know, the Pride just started their preseason training this week. They've got three friendlies before the season starts, all against college teams. Two of those are open to the public. You know, they're at UCF, they're at South Florida, they're at Florida State. I think the first and third of those are open to the public. The first one is free. The second one's closed. Third one is you got to buy tickets from South Florida. I don't know what South Florida is going to charge you. I think it's like $9 or $7 or something like that. But, you know, they got to pay employees to be there and open the stadium and stuff. So,
sure. Not
a big deal. Not a small price to pay if you want to go over and check out the Pride and see how they look early, you know, in 2018. So, looking forward to She Believes, Dave, especially, you know, it's four of the top teams in the world playing, you know, France, England, Germany, and the U.S. So obviously excited to see Alex Morgan play. Don't know if Ashlyn will play based on Jill Ellis. probably not, because Jill just likes to ride one goalkeeper until she falls over, as she's done in the past. And we'll see. I don't know if Harris will get a run out, maybe in that middle game, maybe not. We'll just have to wait and see what Jill ends up doing. It's a compressed schedule, so you would hope that she'd get a game. But goalkeeper is, you know, I guess the position that is most equipped to go three games a week.
Most
equipped so than a forward, or obviously, or a midfielder or whatever. So we will see. But Orlando is the site of the final day of that tournament, so that's going to be fun for us because we'll be out there to catch that, and you know, hopefully everything will still be very much in the air coming into that final day of the tournament, because it's, you know, they're all three of these are doubleheaders. They're, you know, the best of the best. I mean, this is kind of like a friendly World Cup almost in some respects. And
yeah, numbers 1, 2, 3, and 6.
Yeah. So, you know, you're talking about four of the top six teams in the world, you know, getting after it and building up some rivalries already. And, you know, a little bit of animosity, you know, I think it's safe to say, between some of these teams. And, you know, they all want to be where, you know, I'm saying that the three visiting teams all want to be where the U.S. is, and number one in the world. And they want to knock off the Americans, and they did that last year. It was not a good She Believes Cup last year. So on the 1st of March, the U.S. will play Germany at 7 o'clock. France will play England in the early game. The second game is on the 4th. The U.S. will play France, and Germany will play England. And then on the 7th, the U.S. will play England in Orlando at 7 o'clock. That will be preceded by France versus Germany at 4 o'clock. Looking forward to it, Dave. What excites you about this tournament?
Well, I mean, we just mentioned it, you know, for the top six teams. I mean, you know, talk about women's soccer powerhouses. Obviously, you know, U.S. being number one and having been up in the, you know, the top echelons, you know, for years. But, you know, adding in Germany, England, and France, it's you're simply going to see some of the best women's soccer in the world, period. And, you know, we'll get to see them essentially as double headers. And more importantly for us, we get to see the culmination of it in Orlando City Stadium. So how can you not want to go watch that? It's tough for me. I'm up in Tallahassee, but for all you listeners who are in Orlando, good gracious, 311, make your way down to the stadium and you know, go watch the U.S. women's national team, and including, you know, at the very least, Alex on the field, if not Ashlyn. So it's Listeners know I'm a big proponent of the women's game. I love watching the Pride. I love watching U.S. Women's National Team. And the women's game is unfortunately small enough that you can do this She Believes Cup and get those top teams and play this little round robin thing. It's good for the sport and it's good for the fans.
Yeah, I think what excites me about this tournament is the with it this year is to see how the U.S. bounces back from last year's disappointing She Believes Cup. I'm anxious to see if they go out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulders and want to prove something. You know, they've tried a number of different, players throughout 2017, a few different formations. Mm-hmm. I think the formation sort of experiment they had going last year didn't really pan out very well. And I think this year they look like they have a little bit more clear idea of at least defensively how they'll line up. I don't know. You know, what they're going to do in terms of the midfield. You never really know what Jill's going to do in terms of, she never really seemed to try a lot of new players. She just sort of moves around the ones she has, kind of. But I think you could see that Alex Morgan has been in form, and she has been certainly somebody that's been gaining minutes. Julie Ertz is always going to be in there. Mm-hmm. Mallory Pugh is emerging as a real, real talent. I've been watching her since the U.S. Women's youth teams and the Youth World Cups that she performed in. She's been an exciting player. And, of course, Becky Sauerbrunn is a staple. Alyssa Nair has become a staple in goal. She really likes to fall back on security blankets. Dahl Kemper seems to be the partner for Sauerbrunn now that Ertz has moved up into the midfield. It doesn't seem to be a lot of players that kind of get a run out in terms of, seeing how they do and blend in and mix in with some of the regulars. It seems to be, you get a few minutes here for a Lynn Williams, but you don't maybe get like a consistent 3-4 games in a row to see how she does. Kristen Press is either a starter or a first off the bench kind of player right now. Mm-hmm. Rose Lavelle was starting to emerge as a player that could get minutes, and then she's sustained a series of injuries. Not really sure where Crystal Dunn fits right now in the current setup. It's going to be fun to see how exactly the team comes out and gets after some of these really top teams. I'm excited.
And like you say, even who hits the field.
Yeah, I want to see what Jill's going to do, because the team that she's been running out there, with the exception of Mal and Rose obviously, and she's been injured, but there's not a lot of youth on this team, and this team's getting a little bit long in the tooth, and the next cycle's coming. And you look at somebody like Carly Lloyd. How many more games is she going to be getting? Probably not a ton. But there's some really good young players, and I think there were some opportunities to get some of those players on the field within the last year and Jill just didn't take those opportunities. We saw players get called up but not get on the field. The good thing about the friendly in January was we did get to see some new blood. We saw some young players from Stanford get on the field, and Savannah McCaskill got a run out, not very long, but she got some playing time. So it'll be fun to see that next wave. Having covered the College Cup, I can tell you there's some amazing players coming up through the college system, and I'm really excited to see how some of these players shake out.
Absolutely, and like you say, if I agree with you, I think that Jill tends to stay with those that she trusts, but it would be nice, especially given that I know they want to win the She Believes Cup, but if we can see a Rose or somebody just out there, even if it's just coming off the bench, I think that would be good.
Yeah, Tierna Davidson is the player I was thinking of from Stanford, and I thought she did okay. I think she did okay. I'm wanting to see more, but obviously it's a tough ask to send someone like that out against France and Germany and England, but looking really forward to covering that, and we'll certainly continue to cover the U.S. teams because we got players on them, and of course we would have had Dom playing for the men in the friendly, but he had the hamstring issue followed by the quad issue. So anyway, Dave, I think it's time to put a bow on episode number 113. Definitely want to thank our special guest, Shalina Zadorsky, and thank you to Jackie Maynard from the Orlando Pride Communications staff for setting that up. And we were 4 for 4 in the off season of getting really great guests, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Good job, man.
So we will be back. I'm trying to think ahead to when that will be. I think what we'd like to do is have a show maybe even starting next week to go weekly before the first game of the MLS season. I'm going to talk to Paul Tenorio. He said he would come on here early in the season. I'm going to see if we can get him and maybe do a little bit of a season preview before the first game. And then we're, you and me, we'll be back in the groove and trying to do this thing every week.
Absolutely. And don't worry, everybody, I'll have a new headset.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll lose the cough. I couldn't have done this show this long last week at this time. I was laid up with the flu, and it was a pretty horrible, horrible thing. it really, really kept me down for several days, and glad to be starting to be in some semblance of normal. Probably still only about 85-90%, but made it through. In fact, if you listen to the Shalina Zadorsky interview, I probably sound a little bit better today than I did when I recorded that just a few days ago. But thanks to her for being here and being such a great guest. So episode number 113 will go in the books. We will be back again. I can't believe we're already starting to do this weekly, but I guess we'll be back next week with an all new episode of the Mainland Podcast. So get your questions in Twitter. Hashtag AskTMLPC. Ask us anything. Doesn't have to be soccer related. Read our stuff on themainland.com. Please, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and listen to us on your devices. And again, I have to admit, I was lazy, didn't look to see if we got any 5-star reviews to read, so I'll look for next time. But because we had so many trades and acquisitions to talk about, I wanted to give that our full attention, and also kind of lucky we didn't get a big mailbag because there was so much to discuss, but especially with both of us a little under 100%. But by all means, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and we'll read it on the air. So thanks on behalf of David Rowe. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off episode number 113 of the Mainland Podcast, the way I always do, by saying, go City!